At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is Ryan Fitzpatrick, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Neil Reynolds Podcast, episode 17. Hope you're enjoying the series so far. If you are, please leave us a review and a rating on iTunes. Tell your friends, spread the word. And this week, we are joined by NFL royalty. When you get that gold jacket, when you get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio, it's truly special, and you are truly special as a player. And really, you can't tell the story of the NFL without telling Kurt Warner's story, which is why this episode of the Neil Reynolds Podcast is longer than usual. But trust me, you'll want to listen to every minute of it as we sit down with one of the greatest quarterbacks in NFL history and one of the league's most inspirational figures. So sit back, relax, and enjoy Kurt Warner's story, as his career was quite the ride.
No doubt. It was unique, Neil. It was, going through it. It wasn't always the most fun. Didn't always see it for what it was when I was in the midst of it. But it's one of those things, like so many things in life, that, you know, when you're 10 or 15 years down the road and you can turn around and you can look back, you're grateful for the ride, and you're grateful for what you learned at the different places, and that you don't have a story like everyone else's. And so I think that's, you know, what I look back now. You know, for the longest time, I was always, you know, kind of asking, you know, why me? You know, why did I have to be the guy that worked in a grocery store and sat on the bench for 4 years and got cut and played all over the world trying to get my opportunity? And then when it's all said and done, you kind of look back and you kind of go, why me? Why did I get this journey? Why did I get this story? And that's unlike anybody else's. And then, you know, to be able to accomplish what I did along the way, I think it makes it more special. And it makes it something that can really connect with a lot of people differently than, you know, having a great college career, being drafted high, having a great career. You know, not a lot of people can associate with that particular career arc. A lot more people can relate to mine, at least in, you know, from the standpoint that it's not always easy, and there's struggles that come into play in most people's lives. And sometimes you got to fight through those things. And, you know, I said on my Hall of Fame speech, sometimes you got to do what you got to do while you're waiting to do what you were born to do. And I think that's so much what life is like for most of us is, you know, sometimes we just got to find a way. We got to work in a grocery store. We got to make ends meet while we're chasing after what it is that we really want in life. And so I'm so grateful for it now. But as you said, it was a bit of a journey. It was a lot longer getting there than I wanted it to be. But I think it just made everything a little bit sweeter and helped me to appreciate what I ended up getting and the moments that I had more than I may have otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, just as you say that and go through that answer, maybe it was because it makes you almost think, maybe because whatever greater power it was knew you could handle it and knew you could learn the lessons of it and be a mentor down the road. It makes you think that way. It really does, because you did handle it.
Well, I don't think there's any question. I mean, you know, I'm a man of faith anyways. So I believe that God does crazy things and he prepares us different ways. And, you know, the bottom line is I'm also realistic with who I am as well and who I was at that time. And there was no way I would have ever been the quarterback that I became had I not had some of the training ground that I needed. You know, after sitting on the bench for 4 years in college, I wasn't prepared. I hadn't seen everything. I wasn't seasoned as a quarterback. And, you know, so I go to Green Bay and I end up getting cut by Green Bay. And, you know, at the time you're thinking, oh man, here goes the dream. And that's when I ended up working in a grocery store. But, you know, the ironic thing is that when I was in Green Bay, Brett Favre was the starter there. And Brett Favre didn't miss a single start in his career from that moment until the day I retired. Until the day I retired, he started every Sunday. So had I made the team, I might have made it onto another team after 2 or 3 years, but I would have never played. You know, I would have had a few games in preseason to kind of hone my craft, and that's all I would have gotten. You know, over the next 4 years as I was making my way back, I played 3 years in arena football. I played a year over in Europe, and I played more football than any backup quarterback in football, no matter where you were at the time. And so I came to grow and become a better quarterback and see things and develop some of my skills that would ultimately prepare me for when I got my other opportunity. And so there's no doubt. I mean, so many things from a life perspective for sure. But even from a football perspective, there's no doubt that, that time was a training ground for me to become the person and the player I would eventually be when I got my second chance. And I believe that made all the difference in allowing me to kind of jump in with both feet and hit the ground running and ultimately have the career that I had.
Let's go through some of it then. Let's talk about football growing up. Did you always want to be a quarterback? Were you always the one throwing the football in the backyard?
Absolutely not. When I was growing up, I was actually a wide receiver. Obviously by my own assessment, I was a really good wide receiver. And I know a lot of people that they've only seen me kind of in the NFL and in that portion of my career. And, you know, they look at me and go, there's no way you would have made it as a wide receiver because you were slow and unathletic, where I actually was fast and pretty athletic when I was younger. Just not very many people got to see that. But no, I wanted to be a wide receiver. And it's just kind of a crazy story that it wasn't until I was in high school, as a freshman in high school, and went out for the football team, and we actually had nobody try out for quarterback. So the coach kind of just lined us up and said, all right, here, take a ball, and I want to see all you guys throw the ball. And so, you know, I threw the ball the farthest, and so he just kind of looked at me and goes, okay, you're going to be my quarterback. You know, and I tried to talk him out of it, like, no, you don't want me as your quarterback. You really want me as your wide receiver. Trust me. And he's like, nope, you're going to play quarterback for me. And so that was how I got thrown into the quarterback position. Never wanted to play it. Wasn't really my goal. Although I could always throw the football, but I fell in love with being a wide receiver, and that's what I was hoping to be at the following levels. But again, having that realistic view of myself, I realized that I wasn't a good enough athlete to end up playing wide receiver at the college or NFL level. So that move was another one of those blessings in disguise. They got me put into the right position at a good time that I could, I could thrive and grow into that position and ultimately play at the level that I did.
And they always say that being a quarterback is not about how far you can throw it. There's so much more to the position, but you got the job because you could throw it far.
Exactly. Well, you know, there's a lot of people that love the fact that you can throw the football a long way. Right. You know, they fall in love with those attributes. But yes, you know, once you play the position, you realize that's about the most, the least important aspect of playing quarterback is how strong your arm is. It's really just got to be strong enough. But you're exactly right. You know, at that level, it was, hey, you know, I just want to see you guys throw it, and your ball looks the best and goes the farthest. We're going to give you a shot. So many more little nuances that go into to the position that are way more important than that.
Now, a big factor in Kurt's career was patience. We'll discuss that later in this chat about how he had to wait for his opportunities in the NFL. And even at college, it was a virtue he had no other choice but to embrace. Attending Northern Iowa, Kurt had to sit and wait for playing time right up to his senior year.
Yeah, you know, that was probably the most difficult time in all of my career. Just because you're right. You know, you're used to being the superstar through high school. You're used to playing. You're used to competing. That's really what it's all about. Practice is one thing, but, you know, not being able to get into games and compete, which is what I love so much, was difficult. And, I think the other hard part about it was that I couldn't really put my finger on why I wasn't playing. That, you know, from a physical standpoint, you know, I measured myself against the guy that was in front of me. And just in my mind, there was no doubt that I was the more athletic quarterback, that I could throw the ball better, that I was just better from a physical standpoint. And again, just like we were talking about guys that can throw the farthest, you know, my mindset at the time was, well, man, if I can throw it better than him, then why am I not playing? You know, that's really what it's about. It's throwing the football. So why am I not on the football field? And so that was a lot of frustration there when you also think you're the best player. You know, it's one thing to be there and the guy in front of you is better and you kind of get caught in that, you know, that cycle. But for me, I didn't feel like that. I felt like I was the better guy on top of it and I couldn't get on the field. And then the third part was, you know, when I did get on the field, you know, our spring games, you know, our practice games and scrimmages and stuff, I always excelled and I always outplayed the other guy. So there were all these things that kind of stacked up and thought, man, what in the world? What's going on here? Why am I not playing? And, you know, so there was a lot of frustration and there was times that I, you know, considered, you know, quitting or transferring and doing some of those things. You know, had a conversation with my mom, you know, during the process and she's like, nope, you just need to wait it out. You know, you're not a quitter. You're not going to just stop this. Just play it out. Worst case scenario, you're going to get an education and we'll just go from there. But you're not just going to walk away from this because, you know, the going gets a little bit tough. And shortly after that, I had a friend on the team that was a little bit older than I was. And, you know, I asked him, he had a better relationship with the coaches because he was older. And I just asked him, do you mind going up to the coaches and just asking them, why am I not playing? You know, what's the deal here? What am I missing, you know, that you guys are seeing that, you know, that has me sitting on the bench and not being able to break onto the field? And I'll never forget, he came back to me and he said, you know, Kurt, what they told me was you're not a very good practice player. And yeah, I don't know if everybody over there in the UK remembers the little rant that that Allen Iverson had, you know, when they were talking basketball and they're asking him like, well, how come you're not practicing? And he's, you know, like, we're talking about practice. I mean, it's not like a game. It's not like the seventh game of the series, not like right. A Super Bowl. We're talking about practice. You know, really? Is that why I'm not playing? Everything else seems to point in the direction that I'm the best guy, but I'm not very good in practice. And that was kind of my mindset right when I heard that. I was like, you got to be kidding me. And then the more I thought about it and, you know, the more, you know, that you kind of take a step back and look at it from a bird's eye view, you start to realize, man, if I'm in college, I get, you know, 10 games in which I'm under the lights. If I'm in the NFL, I get 16 games in which I'm under the lights. In other words, 99% of the time we're doing anything, it's in practice. You know, no matter what you do, no matter what your job is, the lights only come on so often in life. Most of the time we are building our impressions or we are giving an impression of ourselves to people based on what we do in practice. Mm. You know, the coach is watching me every day in practice going, okay, we don't know what he's going to be like in a game, so we got to watch him in practice. My teammates watching me in practice and going, okay, what can we expect from this guy when the lights get turned on? The only way we're going to know is what he does every day, how he shows right. up every day. And so it became a huge lesson for me that, you know, early on it was like, oh, man, really, does practice make that much difference? It's really about under the lights. And then you start to realize whether you're a parent, right, whether you're in business, whether you're in sports, that most of the time the biggest impression you leave upon your kids or your employees or you know, your teammates is what you do in practice, what you do every day, how you show right. up and live your life and hold yourself accountable. And so it really became for me a teaching point to go, okay, never again will I miss an opportunity to make a positive impression upon the people around me, no matter what that is, no matter where that is, you know. But, you know, most of what we do is practice, you know, what we would consider practice. You know, and I think about that with my kids all the time. It's like, it's not just when I sit them down and give them a lecture that I want them to listen. They're looking at me all day long, all the time, every day, right? Going, okay, Dad, how do you carry yourself? What are you doing? You know, how do you love, you know, your wife, or how do you treat us as kids, or how do you go about your job? And that's the only way that, you know, the lesson I'm trying to teach them or the lecture that I'm giving them really sinks in is when they go, oh yeah, Dad shows us that every day, or he models that every day. Now, you know, I should probably listen to him, or at least he's not asking me to do something that he doesn't do. And so that was a huge teaching point for me in my life. And it became something that I prided myself on moving forward, was being great in practice, winning every practice, and making sure that I showed up every day with the same mentality and the same attitude, not just in the biggest moments of life.
Yes, it's an interesting point Kurt makes, as moving into his first experience in the NFL with Green Bay, Brett Favre spoke of Kurt not wanting to take those reps. So what was his mindset going from college, where Kurt was one of the best players on the field, to the NFL?
So the story goes is that this was at our first mini camp, you know, so I had just gotten signed, and it was the first time that I'm, you know, walking out onto the field next to Reggie White and Brett Favre and Sterling Sharp and all these great players. And, you know, you're kind of intimidated anyways, like, man, it's great to be here. And I really thought I belonged here, but man, I'm not really sure if I belong. I got to prove it to myself that I belong on the same field with these guys. And so, you know, when you get there, they obviously give you the playbook, and the playbook's, you know, 3 or 4 inches thick with all kinds of different terminology and things that you've never done before. And so, you know, ironically, Coach Mariucci, who's on, you know, our Sunday show with me, was the quarterback coach at the time with Green Bay. And so he called me and he's like, all right, Warner, go in. And, you know, I just remember thinking to myself, like, I have no idea what I'm doing. Like, I just got the playbook. I don't even know how to call a play. Once I call it, I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I mean, I'm just trying to learn this. I just got here. I can't believe they're going to throw me in. And so my mentality was, well, if I go in not knowing what to do, then I'm just going to make it easy for them to cut me.
Yeah, right? That's like, worse, right?
Like, I'm going to, you know, I sat on the bench for 4 years in college anyway, signed as a free agent, didn't have much of an opportunity with the guys that they had there anyway. So I thought every rep counts, you know, like if I go in there, I better do well, or it's just going to be a mark against me and it's not going to be long till I'm out of there. So that was my mentality, was like, coach, I'm not going in because I am not going to screw this up on day one. So I don't get another opportunity. I am going to wait till I'm ready. You know, he thought I was joking. He's like, no, seriously, go in. I'm like, seriously, coach, I'm not going in. And it was the only time in my career that I ever said I'm not going in. But that was my mentality. And then, of course, you know, I got cut a few weeks later. And again, Coach Mooch and I, we joke all the time. You know, now that I've had a Hall of Fame career, I joke with him, well, you're the guy that cut me. And then his comment to me is always, no, I didn't cut you. You cut yourself. And so we joke back and forth about it. But he is so right. I mean, he's 100% right that I cut myself, because I wasn't willing to step in and, you know, take the hand that was dealt to me. And, you know, so what I realized, you know, again, from that moment was that you can't be afraid to fail. That you're never going to be great if you're afraid to fail. And that's how I was playing. I was out there going, okay, I'm worried about making a mistake, so I'm just not going to go in. And, you know, as you look back and reflect on it, it's like, how could this team ever keep you and believe in you if you're afraid to fail in practice? How are they ever going to put the ball in your hands on a Sunday afternoon or in the biggest game if you're afraid, you know, to go out there and just play and or believe in yourself and have confidence enough that you'll find a way to make it work? And, you know, that's something, again, that I learned in that moment, that I'm fortunate I got another chance. That could have been it for me, that I could have just walked away from my opportunity, said I'm not going in, and never got another chance. But I was fortunate to get another chance. And, you know, I tell a lot of quarterbacks now, and, you know, something, you know, George can take from this, is that I believe all the great quarterbacks are willing to be the reason. And when I say that, I mean, you have to be willing to have the ball in your hands at the biggest moments when things may be going against you. And you have to be willing to be the reason. And of course, we all want to be the reason that our team wins, right?
Right.
And, you know, a lot more people can accept that part of it. Yeah, I'm willing to be the reason that we win. But what comes with that is you have to also be willing to be the reason that you lose. Is you have to understand that there's going to be times the ball's in your hands and you're not going to make the play. And if you're afraid to be in those moments, then you're never going to be as good as you can be. And that was what I was worried about then. I didn't want to be the reason that I got cut, right? I didn't want to go in there and fail and be the reason. But ultimately, that's what it comes down to is, you know, Michael Jordan, you know, talks about it all the time. You know, I've missed so many shots and I've missed game-winning shots and I've done this and I've lost this many games. And that's why I succeed, is because I learn from those moments. And those moments don't define me, even though they're a part of playing the position and taking on the role and becoming the best, was I was going to have my hand, my ball in the ball in my hands at critical moments, and there were going to be times that I didn't make it work. So was I going to be afraid the next time to take that shot? Was I going to be a little more tentative the next time? And that's why I think it's so important that you have to be willing to be the guy that wins games for your team, put the ball in my hands, give me a shot. But you also have to be the guy that's willing to be the reason that your team loses sometimes. And that's the only way to become great. And it was something that I learned in that moment, you know, was to be willing to go down swinging no matter what it was, and to never, you know, say I'm not going in, or I'm not taking that chance, or, you know, I don't believe I can make this happen. And so, again, you know, just like you talked about the journey, that there's so many steps along the way that I was taught important lessons that would ultimately become the reason that I had success, you know, but could have been the reason that I never got there, because I didn't really know them at the stages maybe I needed to know them.
Now, from being cut by the Packers, it's well documented that Kurt spent a period working in a supermarket stocking shelves. He'd met his lovely wife, Brenda, by this point, had a family and all the responsibility that brings. But working nights in a supermarket, that has to be a lonely place to be. So what was he thinking? That it was all over? That he could somehow redefine himself and take a different path to the NFL? What were his thoughts?
Yeah, football was always in my mind. The problem with that situation was it was hard to see a path, you know, from a supermarket back to the football field. And that was the hard part, was that I didn't give up on the dream. I still believed that I could play. But the hard part was, okay, how do I parlay, you know, stocking shelves at night in a grocery store into another opportunity of playing professional football? I didn't see where the connection was there. And, you know, the initial phases were, you know, I went from Green Bay training camp, getting cut, and then going to a grocery store. So, you know, the perspective is, man, I'm this close to accomplishing my dream. And now I couldn't be further from my dream. You know, in a matter of weeks, you know, it just kind of seemed to all fall apart. And, you know, so that was kind of the initial thought, like, man, I don't know how I got here, and I don't know what I'm going to do from here and how this is going to work out. And so you kind of have your pity party, and, you know, you want to kind of point fingers or say, well, man, if my coach in college would have just given me, you know, right, some time to play, or if they could have just kept me a little bit, you know, you start doing all of those things and making excuses. And then eventually I got to the point where it's like, okay, I'm here. You know, this is where I am. I can point fingers all I want and blame people all I want, but that's going to get me nowhere. And all it's going to do is make me bitter when I'm a 40-year-old guy sitting on the couch watching a game going, oh, it's his fault, or it's his fault, it's his fault. And so, you know, I tried to change my mindset and go, okay, you know, what does that path look like? And so, you know, at the time, like you said, I had met Brenda, and she was going to school, and she already had two kids from a previous marriage. So the schedule was basically, you know, me working nights, and then I would go home and I'd sleep for a couple hours. Brenda would get up and go to school. I'd watch the kids all day. She'd come home. We'd do dinner together, and then I'd go back and work nights. You know, when she came home from school, I might run up to work out for a couple hours to stay in shape and throw the football. And then we just started all over again. So, you know, the path was, okay, I'm going to stay in shape, but I got to do what I got to do. And, you know, just kind of wait for that other opportunity, but, you know, trying to make ends meet any way that I could. And so that was kind of the plan off the field. And then, you know, when I was stocking shelves, my other approach was simply, gosh, I don't know how this correlates to anything I'm going to do in life moving forward, because, you know, my career is not going to be in a grocery store. That's not, I know that that's not a part of it. So I don't know how this really pertains, but I remember, you know, as I was doing it, I remember just kind of creating in my mind, like, okay, this is where I'm at. If there's one thing that I can do that may help me down the road, it's just taking whatever circumstance I'm in right now, it's in a grocery store, and saying to myself, okay, how can I be the best grocery store stocker, you know, in our store? And, you know, it sounds like a stupid thing, like, really, what's that going to do? But it was really about creating a mindset in, you know, in my mind of, hey, whatever you do, be great at it. You know, learn the attention to details. Focus on, you know, what you can focus on in this moment to kind of separate you from everything else, or maybe to help you to develop something that'll help you down the road. And so, again, I don't know if you ever worked in a grocery store, Neil.
I did. I had no intention of being the best ever. I couldn't wait to get in and get out. That's on me.
You know, what we had to do when we were stocking shelves was, of course, you know, every night they would give us a particular aisle. And then they would, you know, throw all the boxes in the aisle with whatever, you know, they had ordered. And we got to load up the shelves with the boxes. You know, we had to stock them back up. But inevitably, there were, you know, the whole aisle was not fully stocked. You know, there were certain things that, you know, went too fast. And so shelves that were more empty than others. And so at the end of the night, what we had to do is we had to do what they call facing the aisle. And so what that meant is we had to take, you know, every item. And no matter how many, you know, of that item were there, we had to pull them to the front of the shelves and we had to line up the labels. And so, you know, when that first person walked down the aisle at like 4:30 in the morning, it looked like our aisle was completely stocked full. You know, everything was perfect and they could read the labels when they walked by. And again, I know there wasn't a single mom that came into the grocery store at 4:30 or the dad that was running in to grab something before he went to work that ever thought, oh, man, this aisle 7 looks really nice at 4:30 in the morning. But my mindset was I wasn't leaving the store until I felt my aisle was perfect, was as good as I could leave it. So if there was somebody to recognize it, that they would walk down and go, man, this guy does this better than anybody in the store. And again, it seems like a corny little thing, but it developed a mindset in me that, hey, you know, sometimes we don't get a chance to choose our circumstances,
right?
But we get a chance to choose how we deal with our circumstances and what we're going to do in those moments, even when nobody's watching. And so as crazy as it was in a place that I didn't want to be, it helped to teach me and shape a mindset in me that I would take with me and, you know, carries with me to this day, is that everything I do, I don't do a lot of things, but everything I do, I want to be really, really good at it. You know, I want to be the best at that particular area of my life. And I feel like, you know, you got to take that mindset and you got to apply it if you really want to have impact in the different areas that you're living in. And so, again, a crazy journey, but God taught me a lot of things, right? I learned a lot of things along the way that would ultimately shape, you know, most importantly, the person, but shape the player that I would become and how I went about my job when I finally got that opportunity.
That opportunity Kurt had been waiting for came in 1999, yet it was in different and difficult circumstances. Kurt's chance to impress with the St. Louis Rams would come at the expense of teammate Trent Green, who was injured in a preseason game against the San Diego Chargers. With Kurt thrust firmly under the spotlight, coach Dick Vermeil stated that his team was going to rally around him as their quarterback in the absence of Green.
When it first happened, when Trent got hurt, I didn't know how serious it was. You know, so it happened in the first half of our third preseason game. You know, and I just go in at that point and, you know, hey, okay, next man up. You kind of take that mentality and, you know, kind of in the back of your mind, you're just, you know, you don't think, oh, this is a season-ending injury, and all of a sudden I became the starter. Even though that's a part of it, you just kind of go, okay, hopefully it's not serious. Hopefully Trent will be back in a couple weeks. But in the meantime, here's my opportunity. And then I actually went into the locker room, you know, at halftime and, you know, went and saw Trent and, you know, just, hey, how's it going? Do they know anything? And he basically told me at that point, like, you know, it's an ACL. I'm going to be out for the season. You know, it's your job now. And you're right. I mean, it's always a sticky situation because they're not mutually exclusive, right? You know, just I became the starter and, you know, and then you've got a friend that's hurt. They coincide. And so, you know, I felt bad for Trent because, you know, and it's, again, one of the things that my Hall of Fame speech, you know, the only player, you know, teammate of mine that I really thanked, because I think it's just too hard to go out and try to thank everybody, right? And, you know, was Trent Green. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because, you know, he had gone through a journey similar to mine before he got his opportunity with the Rams, is that, you know, he was teaching school and he was out of the game for a while and then got an opportunity with Washington and did well. And then Mike Martz brought him to St. Louis and he signed his big contract. So everything, you know, that I ultimately went through, Trent was going through, and this was his opportunity, and then bang, he gets injured. And so your heart went out to a guy like that, and especially, you know, as I got to know him more and as he was there for me, he's just, if you know Trent Green at all, I mean, he's just class all the way around. And so you just felt awful for him. But at the same time, you also understand the nature of the business is that, you know, sometimes this is how it works. And at the same time, I knew this was probably my last opportunity. And so, of course, you know, from the other perspective, when you shut that off for, you know, the pain for your friend and the hurt that you have for a friend, there is an excitement that, hey, this is what I've worked for. And now I've got an opportunity, you know, to go out and do it. Even, you know, unfortunately, it's, you know, at the detriment of a friend of mine and a teammate of mine. But there was definitely excitement there of, okay, here we go. You know, this is the opportunity that I've been waiting for. And, you know, things are set up and I'm in a perfect situation to be able to go in and really see if I could play. And, you know, just like I said, with the Packers, you know, there's one side of you as a competitor that always believes you can compete and you can play, right? Oh yeah, I belong there. Oh yeah, I can play at the next level. But for all of us, every time you make a step up to something else, you got to prove to yourself that you really do belong. You know, you can't
just
show up. Sorry,
let me just ask you on that. Sorry, Kurt, let me just ask you on that then. As you stepped up, so you're trying to prove to yourself, you start your first three games, three touchdown passes in each of those three games. And I know quarterback, any athlete, it's about building blocks, getting better. But there must have been an element of you that felt like, well, I've arrived. This is the end of my story. I had all this. Do you know what I mean? It was like that shouldn't have been the end, and it wasn't the end, of course. But it could have been an end. It could have been a fairy tale end just to get to that point. Yeah. You had to keep driving on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, and I think there's a couple things in there. You know, the first part was, you know, everybody that talks about my career, they talk about, you know, the rags to riches, the 4 years on the bench, the getting cut, the grocery store, you know, arena football, blah, blah, blah. You know, and then out of nowhere, right? You know, I mean, from a stocking shelves to winning the Super Bowl, like, oh my gosh. You know, so the first part of it was that, you know, what people didn't see, or, you know, people ask me, like, how did you have that success so quickly? You know, what people didn't understand was I did play 1 year in college. And the 1 year I played in college, I was the best player. I was voted the MVP of my conference. Right. And then I played 3 years in arena football, and we went to the championship two out of the 3 years. I was the best quarterback in the league all 3 years. I went to Europe, same thing. And so when people are, you know, looking at all the things that went against me, when I actually got the ball in my hands, all I knew was I was always successful. Like I had always played well. And so that was the first part of it, is that I wasn't overwhelmed when the ball was in my hands, because that's where I had always excelled. The hard part was getting the opportunities that I wanted, not playing once I got there. So I was very confident in my skills. The other thing that people don't understand is that I did play arena football. So in arena football, what happens is you're expected to score touchdowns every time you touch the football. You're expected to score 50 points a game. And so when things started going really well in the NFL that first year, you know, everybody's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. And there was a part of me going, man, I can't believe we had to punt three times in this game.
Yeah, like, only three touchdowns.
What are we doing here? You know, we got to be better than this. And so my mentality was score, score, score.
Yeah.
You know, the great thing was the mentality of arena football was very much how we played with the Rams. Is, you know, our mentality was throw caution to the wind. We are going to attack. We are going to try to score. We are going to take chances. And so I couldn't have, you know, hit the lottery any better when I finally did get my opportunity. I had a coach that called plays that fit my skill set. We played the game very much like my mindset of the leagues that I had been. And I was surrounded by unbelievable talent. I mean, Hall of Fame talent, you know, everywhere I looked. Mm. And so all of those things together, you know, allowed me to do those things early on, as you said. You know, and a funny story is that, you know, now they don't do the buys nearly as early in the season. But my first year, we had our bye the second week of the season. Wow. Yeah, week two.
So no, I've just got going.
So, right. So I, you know, we played the first game and I remember, you know, that next week we went back home to Iowa and we were driving the car, Brendan and myself, and I got a call from, you know, the PR guy with the Rams. And he told me, he goes, Kurt, you've been chosen as the NFL player of the week this, you know, week one. So I remember getting that call and I remember looking at Brendan going, we did it. I have no idea what's going to happen for me. I don't know if I'm ever going to play another game or if I'm awful next week and I get cut. But for 1 week, I was the best player in the NFL. You know, I've proven to everybody that I could do what I set out to do. And, you know, and like you said, that could have been the end. You know, it could have just been the one game and things went well and I proved to myself and I proved to everybody that I could play. But, you know, fortunately for me, it wasn't just one game. Yeah. And we had, you know, a magical season and things played out. And you know, again, to go from there to winning the MVP, to winning the Super Bowl, to winning the Super Bowl MVP, all of that stuff in my first year was pretty incredible. But I also kind of, you know, as I step back and reflect on it, you know, the amazing thing is we talk about the journey, right? And if somebody would have come up to me when I was 13 years old and dreaming of playing in the NFL, and they would have said, hey, by the time you're 28 years old, you will have won a Super Bowl, you will have won a Super Bowl MVP and been MVP of the NFL, would you take it? Heck yeah, sign me up. I am in. By the time I'm 28, you got it. You know, just the crazy thing is that it was in my first year.
Yeah.
But because of the journey and everything else, it was almost like my career got fast forwarded. And so where a lot of guys work from 23 to 28 to become that guy that's seen in a particular light, you know, in their business or in the NFL, you know, I worked my way before that to become the quarterback. And then when I got there, it was all kind of thrust upon me really quickly. So I was able to hit the ground running with my career. And, you know, everybody knew who I was after year one. You know, right. I was able to start building my resume after year one. And so, again, it's crazy how things work out. But when it's all said and done, you know, I would have taken that resume when I was 28, regardless of what it looked like, whether I played 5 years or 1 year. It just so happened that it got thrown into a shorter period of time, but it allowed me to go forward and kind of establish myself and establish a platform very, very quickly in my sport, and allowed me, I guess, to catch up to where a lot of other guys might have been that had a path that played out a little bit smoother than mine.
We'll be back with Kurt Warner after this short break on the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Hi, I'm Bruce Arians, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Welcome back to the Neil Reynolds Podcast and my conversation with NFL Hall of Famer Kurt Warner. Now, before the break, we touched upon Kurt's challenges to make it in the NFL. He was released early in his career by Green Bay, and that meant he had to work in a grocery store, but he eventually found his way back with the St. Louis Rams, where he would win the biggest prize of them all, the Super Bowl. From the highs of winning in 1999 to the lows of suffering defeat at the hands of the New England Patriots in 2001, Kurt has experienced both sides of that coin. That New England loss carried over the following season as St. Louis lost their first five matches, a reminder of the reverberations a Super Bowl defeat can bring about.
I think what was so hard, I think there's two things that were really hard about, you know, that moment or that game. You know, the first was we were supposed to win, you know, and I think expectations is always a very difficult thing because all of us want to play to a level where we create expectation, right? We want to, you know, people to believe, hey, every time they go out, they're going to win a Super Bowl, or every time Kirk plays, he's going to throw three touchdowns. I mean, we want to set those expectations, you know, upon ourselves. And more importantly, we'd love to have other people going, we expect this of him because he's that good. But then when you don't live up to him, it's a really hard thing, right? When everybody expects you to do something and you don't, and you can't live up to that, or you don't in moments, it's really hard. So I think that's one thing that made it really hard was that we weren't the team from 2 years ago that came from nowhere and nobody expected anything. And we could throw caution to the wind because if we didn't win the Super Bowl, hey, we're doing things that nobody expected us to do. Then you get in that moment and you go, oh my gosh, we're supposed to win and we didn't. we didn't meet those expectations. And I think that's part of what led into the next year, was we felt like we missed an opportunity. Mm. But we're going to make it up the next year, right? It's the one thing that you always tell your teams in sports is like, last year is over. Doesn't matter how good or how bad, it does not carry into this year. Nothing about last year carries into the next year. And, you know, we thought, okay, well, we blew that opportunity. We're going to make up for it this next year. And we tried to press and push and you know, and win the Super Bowl every week of the next season. And it just spiraled out of control. And I think it was a great lesson for us. And then the other part of what made that hurt so bad was, you know, to me, what I always wanted to be recognized for, or if there was one thing that my, you know, I wanted my teammates to say about me when my career was over, it was that at the biggest moments, he played his best football. And what was so disappointing about that game was we didn't play our best football in the biggest moment, that we were a much better team than we played like on that day. And, you know, when you get to those moments, you understand how rare they are and how few and far between it is to play in a Super Bowl. And you never want to go and play that game and not put your best foot forward and not really give yourself a chance to win. And like you said, we had a lot of yards and we moved the ball up and down the field, but we couldn't put the ball in the end zone. You know, we shot ourselves in the foot over and over and over again in that game. And again, nothing, not to take anything away from the Patriots. They outplayed us, but we just didn't play our best football game. And that to me was what really, those two things is what made it so disappointing when it was all said and done. And, you know, one of those moments in one of those games that I probably think about more than any others, simply for those two reasons, right? Is that we didn't meet the expectation that we had for ourselves, that others had for us, and we just didn't play our best football and didn't play our best in the biggest moment. And we missed an opportunity to do something really special.
Let's put a bit of the middle of your career all together. And obviously you lost the starting job at the Rams to Mark Bolger. You were then with the Giants and they draft Eli, and then the Cardinals and they have Matt Leinart. And looking at different quotes from around that time, Torrey Holt said you were a true professional. You were the perfect mentor to those players, those other quarterbacks. I've been very fortunate. Obviously, I knew of you then, but I know you now. You know, we've been able to tour around the country. I've been able to spend time with yourself and Brenda, and you are competitive. You're competitive if we're playing charades on the stage, yes. If we're throwing footballs into buckets. So you were the true pro, but it must have killed you, Kurt.
It was hard. You know, that, you know, by far is the most difficult thing, you know, to do is, you know, for me, it was not, you know, helping those young quarterbacks. That was easy, you know, to go, hey, you know, understand the situation and understand I'm a backup now, and to help those guys and to push those guys and to give them everything I could give them to help them be better. That was the easy part. The hard part was going to practice every day and to have to run the scout team and have to have, you know, a defensive coach hold a card up, you know, with pictures of what we were doing. And oftentimes they would circle a guy and go, throw it to this guy. Yeah, even if he's double covered, just, you know, it was like you could have pulled anybody off the street and said, here, take a football and just do this for us. And so that was the hardest part, was showing up every day to the competitive part of practice and not really being able to compete. And it almost drove me to retire a couple of times where it's like, I can't do this anymore. I'm not cut out to be. And, you know, there's guys that can play a long time in the NFL and have great careers and then step into the backup role. There's other guys like myself that could never do that. I was in a backup role, but I could not have played in a backup role year after year going into things going, hey, you're really not competing for this. You're just the backup and you'll play if something happens. But other than that, I couldn't do that. You know, as you said, that's what drove me. That's what I loved about the game. I love the cat and mouse. I love the competitiveness. I love trying to live up to my own and everybody else's expectations. I loved pushing the envelope. And so when it gets to the point where it's like, okay, boom, you got to stop all that. No longer do you get to do any of that stuff on a daily basis. Yeah, I fell in out of love with the game of football, or at least that part of the game of football, because that's not what I was all about. And it's not why I fell in love with it. It's not why I wanted to play it. And so those were by far the most difficult moments is the daily grind of, you know, going through another practice and going, my gosh, what am I doing? Like, this is awful. I am miserable playing this game because I don't get to do, as you said, I don't get to do what I'm made to do. Like, that is who I am, is to compete, you know, in anything. And just, again, I love the mental side of it and being able to outthink people, even if you can't out physical people. And, you know, so that those were by far the toughest moments, was just trying to figure out how to balance who I was as a competitor and a person with the role that I now had to play within these organizations, and be able to come to work every day with the right attitude. And that's why there was times I was like, I just got to retire because I can't come to work and be the guy and the person that I want to be in this role over and over again. And fortunately, you know, each of those roles was short lived where, you know, again, I got an opportunity to start again and then get an opportunity to start again. And so it wasn't like I was doing it year after year, you know, or at least having to accept that role year after year. Otherwise, I probably would have retired much sooner than I did.
Fast forward to 2008, and Kurt's season would finish twice under the confetti, once as the NFC champions with the Arizona Cardinals, and then in the Super Bowl as the losing team against the Pittsburgh Steelers. But unlike in 2001 with the Rams, there was no expectation being placed on the shoulders of those Cardinals players, including their quarterback, Kurt Warner. Did that make defeat any easier to stomach?
Without question. And, you know, again, you can look back to the Patriots Super Bowl too. And it's one thing that I share with a lot of coaches, you know, year after year, if they find themselves in the Super Bowl and end up losing the Super Bowl, is that, you know, too often we look at the end result of that final game and we allow that to define a season. And, you know, one thing we didn't do after that Super Bowl, you know, against the Patriots, we didn't celebrate our season. I mean, we went 14-2. You know, I won my second MVP in 3 years. You know, we accomplished some unbelievable things that year and, you know, had a great run and just happened to, you know, to lose, you know, on the first Super Bowl that's ever been decided on the last, you know, field goal on the last. I mean, so many different things, but we didn't celebrate it because we missed our mark. So we didn't celebrate it. And I think that's one of the reasons why we couldn't put it behind us. Is because we didn't celebrate what we had accomplished. And so, you know, fast forward a number of years to playing with the Cardinals. And, you know, you said it, the first part was that there was no expectations. When I came to Arizona, you know, I almost felt like it was a match made in heaven because nobody had any expectations for me. You know, everybody looked at me and said, yeah, he might as well go to the desert. That guy's, you know, his best years are behind him. He can't ever win again. It's never going to happen. So why not go to Arizona, a place that, you know, people, your careers go to die and a place that they haven't won in 50 years, it's never going to happen. So then when we actually made the playoffs and, you know, and people, even that year when we made the playoffs, were like, yeah, it's the worst playoff team ever.
Right.
So not just the worst playoff team of that year or the decade. No,
they're saying in history.
Worst playoff team ever, you know? And so people are like, these guys don't even belong here. We should change how we set up the playoffs because of the Arizona Cardinals, because they shouldn't be in them. And so there was, you know, not only were there no expectations, you know, it was like, you know, it was even below that. And so, you know, what we were able to accomplish through that run and the way that we played, and then, as you mentioned it, going all the way to the end where with 2.5 minutes to go in the game, you know, I promise you, it was the first time anybody in the history of football had ever said the Arizona Cardinals are going to win the Super Bowl, right? I mean, just words that would never been uttered before.
Right.
That we actually had played well enough and convinced people that we were good enough to win the Super Bowl. And, of course, we didn't end up winning it. You know, tip your hat to Antonio and Ben and that whole team and what they did. But, you know, we set a new expectation for an entire organization. And, you know, that was one of the reasons why I think enjoying that process – you know, even when we went to Tampa, nobody in our organization, it wasn't just people on the outside. I promise you, nobody in the locker room, nobody in ownership ever thought we were going to win either. They never thought we were going to go to the Super Bowl. So when we went to Tampa and I watched guys, you know, show up at Tampa, you know, first thing is, you know, we got an extra big jet, you know, to take us down to Tampa because we're in the Super Bowl. And so, you know, we get whole rows to ourselves, and every, you know, row has TVs, and, you know, just watching guys walk onto the plane, like, oh my gosh, really? We get our own, you know, so every step of the way, you know, we had players that were just kind of in awe of, like, oh my gosh. So this is what, well, I never thought this would be possible. And so that was one of the coolest things, was me just kind of stepping back and going, I get to watch this through everybody else's eyes. You know, I've been here, I understand this. And even though nobody expected me or us to ever get here, you know, I've been here. So I appreciate these moments, but I got to watch it from everybody else's standpoint. And that was one of the biggest joys, you know, of my career. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I was most proud of was just getting a bunch of guys that didn't necessarily believe to believe and to see what the possibilities were. And so, yeah, I think, you know, a long career, where we were as a football team, the fact that we did play well enough to win that game.
Right.
Right. I mean, and
yeah, you know, so you feel like you left it on the field.
Right. Unlike the Patriots game, is that it came down to great players making great plays
right.
to beat us. Okay. You got to live with that, because that's what the Super Bowl and that's what the game is all about, is, you know, if great players can make those plays in the biggest moments, you know, you kind of feel like we just ran out of time. If we had enough time, we would have still won that game. And so that's how playoffs and Super Bowls, you want those to be defined that way. And so, you know, and I also knew that, you know, my career was coming to an end shortly after that, that it was just, you know, from a perspective standpoint, it was more about appreciating the moments than it was winning. And I think that was the perspective I had gained on life at that point, and on my career at that point, is, you know, quit defining everything by the score on the scoreboard and start defining life by the moments that you get and the opportunities that you've been given. And, you know, again, you know, you reflect back on my career, man, I wasn't even supposed to be there. And right. to play in three Super Bowls and to, you know, be a part of two different teams and to have won a couple MVPs and you know, I mean, and accomplish those things, you're just like, come on, am I really going to allow one game or a couple great plays or a couple minutes in a game to define how I'm going to appreciate this chapter of my life? And I was like, no way. And so, yeah, I just think I had grown. My perspective was different. You know, being able to appreciate it through the perspective of other people, I think helps as well, because oftentimes we have an expectation and we can get disappointed if we don't live up to that expectation. And my expectation was always to win and to win Super Bowls. But when we get a chance to kind of see and realize that, hey, my ultimate goal shouldn't be to just win a Super Bowl. It right. should be convincing the guys that are following me to believe in themselves in a different way, to see themselves in a different way than they've seen themselves before. It's what I want to do as a parent, right? It's what I want to do in business. It's what I've always wanted to do in the locker room, was to be a part of something that was bigger than me and to prove to people the possibilities that life could present us if we just believe in what those are. And so, so yeah, I had a completely different look on life, you know, at that point in time than I did before that. And, you know, I'm grateful. I'm grateful that I really got to enjoy and appreciate those last few years and that last Super Bowl. And I didn't just, you know, hinge it all on winning trophies and, you know, throwing touchdown passes, because I think we can easily get calloused and lost in that part of life. And I was fortunate that I think my journey, you know, helped me to be able to see that differently than maybe I did earlier in my career.
The year after Super Bowl 43 saw the Cardinals back on the playoff trail as they faced Green Bay in a wild card game that was a showdown for the ages. Perhaps sensing the end of his career was coming, Kurt was sensational. He went 29 of 33 for 379 yards and 5 touchdowns. The Cardinals won a game 51-45 in overtime that for me was still the greatest game I have ever seen in person. I was there commentating on that game for BBC Radio. It was sensational. It was a robotic performance from Kurt Warner. He was almost perfect. But within a week, defeat to the New Orleans Saints meant it was all over. He went out at the top of his game, but it felt like his career had come to a screeching halt. Well, for me, at least.
You know, it didn't come to a screeching halt because I knew I was retiring midway through the season.
Okay.
That, you know, what happens in life is that sometimes, you know, our life or our profession can get away from us a little bit. And what I mean by that is that, you know, we all have a standard that we set for ourselves. And what I realized is that for a long time, I had a really nice, healthy standard for myself. It was a high standard, but it was a healthy standard. And then when I got to Arizona, because we weren't a great football team, and I was asked to do a lot more, I needed to do a lot more. My expectation for myself was a lot higher, because if I knew if I didn't play well, we weren't going to win. And so that bar started to get moved up and get moved up and get moved up. And what you realize as a competitor is once the bar set at a certain mark, you're never moving it back down, right? Because you can't go, well, let me just see if I pull it down a notch, can we still be as successful? Because if you're not, you're going to kick yourself that you moved it down, you know? And so the problem is you just keep raising it and raising it and raising it. And what had happened is that it became an unhealthy balance for me in life,
right?
Was that I was pushing too hard and I couldn't sleep. And that Super Bowl that I played in 08, I weighed in at 201 pounds, which I hadn't weighed since I was like a freshman in college. It was all just kind of, you know, it didn't transfer on the football field, because on the football field, I felt great physically. I felt like I was in good shape and could do everything I needed to do. But internally, the physical part internally and at home and in life, it was starting to deteriorate, you know, just my life and what I wanted it to be. And so I knew that in 2008, decided to come back in 2009. But that same thing was there in 2009. So about midway through the year, I knew, I'm like, I just can't do this anymore. It's just not healthy for me. It's not going to give me the quality of life moving forward if I do it. So this is it. And so I knew that was the case. So then we move forward to the playoffs. And, you know, one of those things that I don't think any competitor ever wants is you never want to be thrown out of the game, or you never want to show people that you're declining. You want them to remember you the way that you played your entire career. And so that was, you know, really, to me, one of my highlights of my career was that the last game I played in front of the home fans in Arizona, and I knew it, and everybody else, nobody else knew it, but I knew it. The last game I played in front of them, you could argue was the best football game that I ever played. That it was, you know, it was just one of those games where you just felt in rhythm. You felt like, you know, once again, it was like, I was born to do this. I'm so glad I got this opportunity, because this is where I'm supposed to be. So it was awesome to be able to go out that way and say, man, of all the great games I played in my career, the best one may have been the second to last game I ever played, or the last game I played in front of my home fans before I retired. It was a beautiful thing. And then obviously the next one wasn't quite as pretty. We got beat down pretty good by New Orleans, and I got knocked out of the game, and there was a lot of things going on. So that one wasn't quite as pretty.
No.
I wish the Packer one, you know, sometimes I think back and I, you know, because we won that game in overtime.
Yeah, on the crazy defensive play.
You know, there was parts of me that said, man, thank God we made that play, because I can't imagine, you know, playing one of the best games of my life and losing.
Oh.
But then by the same token, after what happened the next week, I kind of think, man, maybe Green Bay should have beat us. And I could have said my last game that I ever played in was the best game I ever played in, even though we ended up losing. But I think it was a good way for me to kind of justify everything and say, you know, it's been a great career and I know I can still play physically, but I have to do the right thing for me and do the right thing for my family moving forward. And so, you know, there's times that I regret. If there's anything that I regret, it's the fact that I regret that I allowed that standard to get so high that I couldn't step back from it.
Right.
Because physically I felt like I could play longer. I felt like I could play at a high level, and I could have had 3 or 4 years. I mean, I even feel like I could go back and play right now. I feel that good. And again, it's probably a blessing in disguise, right? I probably feel like this because I did retire when I did. You know, but you know, there was something left in the tank. And I do believe I could have played at a high level. But the other part of me is I'm happy that, you know, that last season, you know, I set some Cardinal records. You know, we had that game in the playoffs. And so I felt really good about my final season in the NFL, that there was no decline, that I sustained what I did in that first year as quickly as it came. I sustained that really whenever I was on the football field. And, you know, kind of going back to, you know, that theme that we talked about, right, is even during my NFL career, you mentioned it, ups and downs and benched here and cut there. But I always felt when I was on the football field that I was as good as anybody that was on the football field, that anybody that played the game. And I can say that all the way to the end. And it's something that, that I'm proud of, that even though I didn't get all the opportunities or didn't get to play as many games as maybe I would have liked, I can honestly say that when I did play, you know, I was very, very successful and played at a high level. And, you know, one little stat that my kids, you know, heard a couple weeks ago, and I had known this for a while, but, you know, there was only three seasons in the NFL where, you know, due to injury or due to being benched or whatever, that I played all 16 games. In all three of those seasons, I took my team to the Super Bowl. You know, when I was on the field and when I got an opportunity to play an entire season, my team went to the Super Bowl. And so, you know, it's little things like that that you're just – you're proud of those things, because I really felt throughout my entire career, when I played, I was really, really good. You know, it was just unfortunate at times that I wasn't on the field and I didn't get – those opportunities. But then when it's all said and done, I look at it and I go, but I was good enough on the field when I had opportunities to accomplish so much and enjoy so much of this game and of being a part of different organizations and stuff, that at the end of the day, the crazy ride that it was, I wouldn't change it for anything in the world. Is that I love that my story is different. I love that no one will ever be able to say they did it the same way. I love that, you know, there'll never be anybody in the Hall of Fame that took my route to get there. You know, so that there's all those things that you're just, at the end of the day, you look back and you go, man, God, I don't know why you chose me for this journey, but I'm glad you did. I'm glad that this is the one that I got, you know, all the way to the point that, you know, just funny, as we're talking about this, Neil, it was 2 days ago that I just finished the latest script for the big screen movie that they're going to do on our journey. And so, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, so many different things, like as great as, you know, again, I don't know how it'll play out, Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and those guys are, Joe Montana, none of those guys are getting a story, you know, movie about their lives. And again,
who's playing the bald guy from London?
What's that?
Who's playing the bald guy from London?
I'm not sure yet. you know, and again, it's not a knock on them, because what they've done is incredible. You know, in their journey. But because the journey's been so different, it speaks to people in different ways. And, you know, now I get some opportunities and some things to happen to have greater impact than what I was able to have on the football field because of that crazy journey, because it didn't play out like everybody, you know, everybody wanted it to, or that I didn't wanted it to. I'm going to get some neat opportunities to be able to continue to impact people.
So there you go. That's my conversation with Hall of Fame quarterback Kurt Warner, one of my absolute favorites. That episode, of course, was over an hour, so I think we'll leave the mailbag this week. We'll definitely get the mailbag in with some of your questions next week, but we'll leave that for now. And next up, we have Scott Hansen, Mr. Red Zone from the NFL Network. So looking forward to that one. Hope you enjoyed that. Don't forget to listen to Game Picks if you haven't already. That's our sister podcast looking at all the picks and games from each week in the NFL. And we thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye for now. This episode was hosted by myself, Neil Reynolds. Our producer is Gary Hayes, while Matt Alabaster is responsible for all of our artwork. Taylor Hayes mixed this episode and also composed our theme music. Special thanks to junior producer Henry Smith and everyone else involved in helping us put this episode together. The Neil Reynolds Podcast is a Highway 61 production for the Reynolds Podcast Network.